TheDigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Center Show, Show 126, Thursday, 11th of October, 2007. Center show with tech.co.uk. It's great to have tech.co.uk sponsoring the show, so please click on the banner on the top of the page, check out their site. And this week returning to the show is Niall Ginsberg, and we're going to be talking about his range of Vista Media Center applications, including one of my favorite big screen headlines, a RSS reader. And we'll be talking about probably the process that he follows for developing Media Center applications and some of the challenges around that, and how he's getting corporates to look at Media Center development. I have email, news items, update on the Media Center Show awards, and a last chance to win Media Center Communicator. First, to an email from Errol. Hi Ian, congratulations on your MVP. I was wondering if you've used Media Center Communicator as seen in this YouTube video, and there's a link for that in the show notes. The Q1 does numerous things by voice, and then at 3:45 he navigates using voice. Navigation looks the same way as Street Deck navigates, and this looks like a One Voice Technologies command and control application. Any thoughts on whether YouTube Q1 demo would work with Street Deck, or they're the same thing? And he gives me a link for that in the show notes. Have a great week. I think the Street Deck software actually looks different to Media Center Communicator, because there's a training section, and one good thing about Media Center Communicator, it doesn't need training. But I do like the idea of being able to voice control your in-car system, like Q1. In fact, I've been thinking about whether I should look at getting the Q1 mounted in the car, but I've sort of resisted doing that so far. But voice control on it would be very nice. It could also be using Microsoft's voice control software that's built into Windows. So thanks for that email. Now an email from Nick Rutum. And great podcast show as always. After listening to the discussion on your guests on show 124, I can't seem to find the answer on these questions. Will the next generation of Media Center extenders work without a Media Center PC turned on? I've used Xbox Media Center for several years now, and the Wi-Fi acceptance factor is very high, as you can turn on the Xbox, access all the media without any hassle. The media is stored on a Buffalo Terrace station and is accessed via SMB share. Will the new extenders access a central NAS to play media? Or will I have to turn on a Media Center PC in the study to have it route the Media Center back to my living room? The Xbox Media Center also upscales existing content to 720p for display on the main TV. Given that the new extenders are billed as HD, will they also upscale media to 720p, 1080i or 1080p? Or again, will this need to be done by the Media Center? Thanks for the email, Nick. Simple answer is yes, the Media Center PC does need to be on to use the extender in Media Center mode. I think you've got to think of it really as the extender is just delivering the user interface from the host Media Center PC. So yes, you do need the PC on. It will still be able to access NAS drives, but that's done through the Media Center PC. So it means that you're really using the power of the PC, and that's why they can get a low power, low noise device connected to your TV. Any upscaling or rescaling and of the content is handled by the PC. I have my Xbox 360 in extender mode set to 720p, and it seems to handle the content and upscaling the content that comes from recorded TV straight to TV with no problem. So thanks for the email. It's a good point, and we kind of take it for granted that everybody knows these extenders need the host PCs on, but you definitely do. One thing to say though is that there's nothing to stop someone adding. A manufacturer added their own software that can talk to NAS drives and other things. It's just for the Windows Media Center experience. You definitely need the Media Center PC on. Well, thanks for the email. The address is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Please keep the emails coming in. I do like reading them out. That's a couple of news items. Last week, Microsoft announced details of version 2 of the Zoom player, and what looks interesting for Media Center users is going to support video sync with Media Center, which means that you'll be able to directly take off your recorded TV straight into the Zoom without having to go through some third-party products to convert it, which is a great idea and what really appeals to me. It also looks like the Zoom is going to support wireless syncing over Wi-Fi, which would be nice. It'd be nice to get that automated. One thing I hate is I download podcasts, listen to in the car, and then forget to sync them up. And then you get in the car and you realise that the content is still on your desktop PC or on your laptop. So I'd like to see that being that automated somehow. Also nice to see that the new software is going to be available for the existing Zooms, so early adopters are not punished, as quite often is the case. And also I mentioned in the press release is that Zoom Marketplace is going to get a podcast feature. So it'd be nice if you could just integrate that directly into the Zoom software, just like you can with iTunes, and just subscribe to a podcast and it turns up on your Zoom, ready to go. Great, but Microsoft, when can we have them in the UK, please? In fact, I actually picked up a Zoom this week. I had an opportunity to get hold of one, so I took it. I was really impressed with it. It's the packaging is very nice, much better than the Xbox packaging, where you end up losing a finger just trying to open a wireless controller. But this is a nice little box with drawers in, and the actual Zoom player is really nice to hold, nice and solid. And I've got my content synced up on there, which is great. Again, getting podcasts into there is a bit messy at the moment. I've got Nimic for downloading podcasts, and then kind of somehow get that synced up with Zoom. I'm just sort of working out on that. So if any listeners are Zoom users and you listen to the Media Center show on your Zoom, well, how do you get the show into there? It'd be interesting to hear. So the Zoom is really nice, and I hope we'll get official support in the UK soon. And I'm looking forward to the Media Center content syncing. In fact, I've opened up a forum on the digitallifestyle.com for Zoom and Zoom discussions, especially around the Media Center area. So have a look at the link in the show notes for that. Also this week, Nivis opened up a beta of their companion software. This is a package for controlling your Media Center PC from another PC. It could be a laptop, a UMPC, touchscreen, wall-mounted PC. I downloaded the beta and gave it a try, and I was really impressed with it. You can control exactly what's going on the Media Center PC, including extender sessions as well. So I was able to control my Xbox 360 session independently of the main Media Center session. You can browse recorded TV, browse music, pictures, videos, and then you can then play them. So I could get Media Center to then play the recorded TV. I could create playlists and queue up music. What I liked about it, it was a couple of different things really. One, you could have your, say, in my case, Xbox 360 connected to the surround sound system, and you're listening to some music and you don't necessarily want to put the TV on. You could use this controller just to create your playlists on my UMPC or another PC around the house and get that playing. And I know some people have got Media Center PCs connected to speakers in the garden and, you know, the bathrooms and all these different things. So you can control all those different Media Center PCs from that one companion software. And, you know, taking it a step further, like I said, you could have a touchscreen wall-mounted PC running the companion software, and you can control any of the PCs in your home. It's very simple to do. You install a client piece of software on the, say, UMPC and the server part on the Media Center PC. And that's it really. It's very simple. It just browses for zones and automatically picks them up. There's no codes to put in or synchronization, everything else. It just picks those up. So I was really impressed with it, and it is nice to be able to queue up the music without actually going over to the main PC. So I do like that, and I think certainly for the I can see for the big installs, this is going to be a good package. So I say it's in beta at the moment. There is a download, so you can try the beta. I have no details on prices yet, but keep an eye on Nivia's website and on the blog, on my blog, for details on that. Last week, Charlie Owen posted a great little add-in for Media Center called Power Playlist. This is a sample application that adds a custom start menu strip to Media Center, and each tile then represents an audio and sideshow combination. So you could have a playlist with your favorite music on, and a slideshow that you've, say, of photos of kids or whatever, And when you want to listen to music, you can put the photos on and you just do it with one press. So it's a nice application, but the whole point of the application really is to show how developers can kind of integrate their own applications into Media Center. And Charlie's posted the full source on codeplex.com. So developers could pick up this and expand on this and look at how Charlie's done it and then take that further. So I think it's a really nice way of introducing developers into Media Center development. And it's the kind of thing really that I'm looking to highlight on this year's Media Center Show Awards. We're going to try and focus on some third-party and enthusiast developers. Anyway, a link for that is in the show notes. And talking to the Media Center Show Awards, I've got the categories open for nominations now. So no voting page up yet, so you can nominate who your favourites are. These are the categories I've got up to now. Best Open Source Media Center Project, Best Free Media Center Application, Best Commercial Media Center Application, Media Center Design Application Design Award, Best Utility, Best Media Center Community Resource, and Best Media Center Enthusiast Blog. If you think there are any other categories that I should be including, let me know. I've left hardware out this year because I'm not sure really that's the area I want to focus on. But I'm open to suggestions on that. There was one additional thing I thought of, which maybe was the favourite gadget. So you could let us know what kind of gadgets you're using within your Media Center system. So I've created a thread on the digitallifestyle.com where you can nominate anything in the categories or comment on categories, or you can email in at thedigitallifestyle.com. Right, finally we've got this is your last chance to win a copy of Media Center Communicator and a LTB Qbeam wireless microphone system, so you can control your PC with your voice. So this is the last chance to win it now. I'm going to close this off after next week. So you've got till next Thursday to get your answers in. And to win this prize, just head over to One Voice's site, which is the link in the show notes. Watch the video and tell me what the name of the slideshow being played is by the voice. So send me in an email in at thedigitallifestyle.com with your answer and let me know the town, city where you are. And I'm going to draw the winner, say, probably next Thursday, so send it in before then, please. And if you'd like to have a play with Media Center Communicator, there's a 30-day free trial on the download section of the site, along with other stuff as well. Right, now a quick message from One Voice. I'll be back with now.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Well, now, welcome back to the Media Center Show.
Hi, Ian. Thanks for having me back on.
It's good to get you back on the show because you've been doing so much Media Center stuff in the last, well, I don't know how long, 12 months almost since we last spoke, I think, that there's a lot to talk about. So just give us a quick recap on sort of who you are and the kind of stuff that you've been doing.
As you said, my name's Noel. I've been doing Media Center stuff for probably, Media Center 2005 stuff for about 2.5 years, and then I sort of got interested in Vista at probably the beginning of last year when it was in beta, and about a year and a half later now, I've got quite a few projects out for Vista Media Center, and been getting right into the MCPL programming.
I guess you've got kind of two kinds of work that you do, and you've got your kind of paid professional stuff, I should say, you know, and then you've got your Media Center applications that you're putting out that some of them are sort of free downloads. So how do you balance that, the work between the free stuff and the paid stuff?
The trick is normally not needing much sleep at all. So I sort of lead a bit of a double life. During the day, I'll be doing work for people who pay pay for it. And yeah, quite often at night I'll be, you know, up till 3 or 4 in the morning working on my own products. But the really, really good thing is probably over, I think since sort of about Christmas last year, I started seeing the two types of work I do actually emerging. And so there's been sort of a lot of commercial work around Media Center, and I'm also using WPF. So that's been really, really great. So there's not so much separation anymore.
On the commercial stuff then, are you finding now that the commercial operators are realising the benefit that Media Center can have, and that they're looking for people to develop applications like that? Because I guess there's not a lot of people out there with the skills for that development.
Yeah, certainly. I think a lot of the big media companies, well, certainly in the Australian and New Zealand marketplace, yeah, noticed sort of over the last 6 to 9 months they're starting to get really excited in what you can do with Vista Media Center. I've been working closely with a company in New Zealand, and where they're going out and doing prototypes and showing clients, you know, what sort of things they can do. And so yeah, it's sort of been really, really positive. And I think there hasn't been much at all on things like Online Spotlight in the past for Australia, but I think all of that side of things is really going to pick up probably towards Christmas. So yeah, it's sort of really it's really changing quite a lot from what we were seeing a couple of years ago, where it was just an unheard of product and people weren't really that interested in doing anything for it.
And so the commercial applications, I don't know which ones you can talk about specifically, but what kind of things are you being asked to develop?
I can't. Unfortunately, I don't think there's any of the applications I can talk about at the moment. Tends to be, I guess, the usual suspects. The two sort of big areas are the sort of video on demand and being able to watch online videos. And also the other big area is sports content and being able to... So I guess, you know, the sort of things you see in Sports Lounge, but a little bit more specific for the sports that are involved. So that seems to be the two big areas that everybody wants.
And these are Media Center applications written in Media Center market language.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So and the interesting thing is that we're talking with, you know, some of the major companies that have a lot of different content on offer, and these are the types of content that they want. All the videos and the sports seems to be the particular things they're interested in getting out to the public, on top of some of their other more traditional services they have.
So these people are then sort of recognising that Media Center is a valid sort of platform for delivering the content on.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know, I guess, what... I guess there's two ways customers tend to look at these things. One is that it's sort of they're offering a value add to their existing service, and they're increasing brand awareness and things like that. And then you've got your other side of people who actually want to make a product that they're going to derive revenue from and have a product that sort of stands by itself. So yeah, getting sort of those two different types of things. I think the most promising ones are the people that just want to get their content out there and aren't trying to look at ways of getting money back off the end users. And I think that's sort of a lot more beneficial all round, and a sort of more of a win-win for everyone.
And do you find that the sort of content providers then need educating in what Media Center is and what Vista Media Center can do, or in fact they're already up to speed on that and they just know, you know, they want someone to come in and develop the applications for them?
I think it's they're still learning about it. I think sort of the because of you know, some of those online spotlight experiences we had on Media Center 2005, they weren't that appealing in HTML and Flash and things like that. So there's sort of, I guess, a whole lot of new re-education that we're going out there and doing. Like the most sort of common received comment would be somebody will see one of the prototypes and they'll be saying, oh wow, we didn't know you could do that on Media Center, and you know, what we saw in the past wasn't anything like this. And so yeah, I think definitely there's people are being educated. They've got an idea of some of the core functions that it can do, you know, around, you know, TV recording and photos and things like that. But I guess there's not as much awareness that they can you know, start providing content and things like that over the platform.
So I guess that's where some of your free applications come in then, isn't it, that you can use those and to show the potential of Media Center?
Oh yeah, certainly. And yeah, we use those quite a lot, and it's, I mean, quite often we'll show them an app and say, oh, this is, you know, sort of 60% of what you wanted to do, and if you use a bit of imagination and put some nice graphics in there and some branding, then you've got an application that suits your content. And yeah, so certainly people can see that. I mean, particularly with, you know, things like the big screen headlines and big screen photos and things like that, and they get an idea of how they can get their own media or their own content and bring it to Media Centre in a similar way.
Mm. Before we talk specifically about the applications that you've been developing, like the big screen headlines, how have you found developing for Media Centre? And now you've had quite a bit of time on the Vista platform. Are you finding it that it's a good application platform to write for?
Good question. I mean, I still find it very, very challenging to work with. I could possibly say that's what's keeping me interested in still developing for Media Centre. It's certainly not an easy development environment to get into, and I think we're certainly seeing that with some of the frustrated developers on Media Centre Sandbox and things like that. But I'm certainly really enjoying it. I guess because you don't get much out of the box at all, I find it very, very challenging trying to come up with brand new ways of presenting UIs and doing things like that. So I still find that very enjoyable, and I really appreciate some of the things that you can do so simply in Media Centre. And I guess I also appreciate some of the things that are harder that could be, a bit more fun working them out.
Yeah, because there's the puzzle element, isn't there? If it's not just sort of bashing out code, is it? It's working out how you're going to do these things, and you're breaking new ground, I guess, on a lot of the stuff as well, because there's not that many people writing Media Centre Market Language application.
Definitely, and it's a lot more than a traditional development experience. I guess there's all these sort of new terms being thrown around, like interactive developer and interactive designer and things like that, and I guess I'm sort of more lately fitting into that sort of category where I'll be spending a whole lot of time inside a design program before I actually jump into the development language and things like that. So definitely it's a different process to what would be traditionally done in the older web apps and e-commerce and things like that, where there wouldn't be that much thought given to the UI at the start. That'd be something that sort of evolved as you went along in the project, whereas I sort of find it's very, very important to work out the UI issues and what it's going to look like and how it's going to feel before you do too much coding, because it plays a very, very big part with the Media Centre application.
Mm. So in terms of the way that you would, so your workflow on starting a new application, you start with the UI design and then the coding comes later in the project?
So I'll probably spend, I'll at least mock up maybe four or five screens of the application before I go in and start coding. I'm sort of very much about these days getting a lot of reuse, so trying to establish very early on in the project, hey, what components do I need to write that I can reuse across the project, and that could be UI elements or it could be underlying components and things like that. So I find sort of drawing it all in design programs first really, really saves a lot of time. I mean, especially that there's no real design or what you see is what you get environment for MCPL at all. So you're pretty much going blind once you start actually writing the code. I often sort of think of it as that I'll spend a bit of time at the start doing the graphics, but then when I go into the MCPL coding, I go into a tunnel for however long, it might be a day or 2 days before I can see any visual results at all, and I'll just be sort of have this design that I made in the design program pinned in my head of where I'm going, and a couple of days later I'll come out of that tunnel and I'll then actually have something interactive I can play with.
I guess then that it is a lot of it's in your mind, isn't it, your design, because the code is not something you can, like you said, you can't really sort of put a bit in and have a look at it, put a bit in, it's kind of the flow of it. You've got to just kind of get all the elements in place, haven't you? And then you can start looking at how it's going to look.
Definitely. And I guess, I mean, there's probably, ways of documenting these things and all of that, but I guess the beauty of developing as a one-man team on these things is I don't need to pass documentation around to other people. So, yeah, I'll tend to do a lot of it in my head or in designs or only things that I'd actually be able to understand. And a lot of it's just sort of sits in my head for, you know, 2-3 days, and as it starts going into code and sort of the, you know, I'll tend to avoid writing up, you know, documents and things like that. It'll be more like to-do lists and what I need to fix lists, and then some sort of general brainstorm areas of, so generally after, you know, I'll spend a couple of days and I'll do my first sort of cut of the application that brings through some of the elements from the design program. Then I'll look at it and I'll sort of say, oh, hey, it'd be cool to have a feature that did this or did that, and I might not have any idea of what the UI is going to look like or something like that, and then I'll sort of go back into the design process again, and, you know, so it can be a bit of an iterative sort of process.
Yeah, yeah. And what tool do you use to do sort of your design layouts and your initial sort of mock-up?
Well, I've been a big fan of the Adobe Fireworks. I sort of find, especially the new version CS3, is just absolutely brilliant. They added a lot of functionality in the, of course, not for Media Center development, but for some of the things that Adobe are doing with Flash and Flex and things like that. And yeah, a lot of them were very well suited to design for Media Center. So one of the things they had was what's called a 9-grid editor, for which is why you stretch images and things like that, and it's the exact same way it works inside Media Center. And up until now, there'd been no graphics program at all that supported doing that. So yeah, I really, really like Fireworks. I also do a little bit, I use Expression Blend quite a lot because I still do a lot of WPF programming. So I do sometimes use the Expression Blend if I want to test out some animations and things like that before I start coding.
But there's not really a great deal of crossover in terms of actual sort of markup code, is there, between the three? You've just got to kind of do it, see if it looks right, and then sort of start coding from scratch.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's very much about the visual design and not about the sort of, when I go into the Media Center markup language, you start thinking about, oh, how are we going to arrange things on the screen in terms of, you know, using grids and tables and all that sort of traditional stuff you do with HTML. And when you're in the design software, you sort of don't think about that at all. I'm sitting there with a 1366 by 768 canvas and doing stuff on that. And generally, in Fireworks, I don't try and animate anything or anything at that point. It's more just about what elements are going to be on the screen and, you know, where are they going to be and what they're going to look like. And doing it, trying to come up with something consistent so it allows me to reskin as I'm going along. So I might decide, oh, hey, I've got this set of buttons. If I've locked down how they're going to behave and what size they're going to be, then it's easy halfway through programming to actually go back and make them a different colour or something like that.
And do you find that you get a lot of reuse between the different applications, or as you start each application, do you approach that as a new project and don't sort of bring anything over?
Yeah, okay, well, it's something I've actually been very much focusing on the last 2-3 months, and I think part of the reason I haven't been releasing betas out to the public, I've been a bit slack on that. One of the things that I've been doing is actually coming up with a sort of a common UI system. I'm going to be releasing that with I've got a new version of Big Screen Headlines called Big Screen Headlines 2 coming out, that's actually going to use a lot of this common UI system. But I think up until about 2-3 months ago, I didn't want to keep reusing things. I reuse techniques and things like that, or I guess the equivalent of algorithms in MCPL and of course the .NET backup code that I use. But the but up until recently, I very much wanted to create something new and interesting. I think I would have been a bit bored if I was trying to do the same UI each time.
Mm. But then just having this, you say, your new method of working with having a sort of an existing baseline UI, does that mean then you can sort of get new applications out quicker?
Yeah, definitely. And it's about, I guess, two things. One is providing a way to, yeah, churn out applications quicker by using that same UI. But also, I've paid a lot of attention to providing hooks in this generic UI to then be able to add on additional screens and experiences and things like that. So maybe an example of that is that in Big Screen Photos 2, there was that traditional sort of picture browser in there, but then there was a button in there that you click on, then it takes you to a geo-browsing experience, which was something very different to the rest of the UI. So I'm sort of trying to allow for that, but with these new experiences and new screens, still being able to retain a look and feel. So the end user sort of will get to new screens, but they'll sort of still know how to use them because there'll be that consistency there between the what they're looking at and what they've seen on the previous page and potentially in another application they're using that I've written.
And do you find then that there's techniques and ways of doing things from an end user's point of view that work better than others, and that the experience you've had in the last sort of 18 months of doing Vista Media Center development means that you know some things work better than others and you can stick with that way of working, say galleries or pivot tables or whatever?
Yeah, certainly, and I think I'm still very much working out what all those things are and trying new things when I bring out each application. But yeah, certainly there's things that just don't work, ways that UI works, and I won't go into the details here, it's all a bit technical and boring, but there's certain things I've learnt not to do and things I've learnt to do, and I think very much in my new programs trying to reuse all the good things I've picked up. And what's been fantastic as well is having the software out in beta, just getting all that feedback from end users and having somebody else look at something from a completely different perspective to me and saying, hey, why didn't you do it this way, or I really expected this button to be there or something like that. So all of that's just sort of is great to get back from users, and it certainly feeds into each new application I create. I think about all those issues and things people complained about, and I think, oh, how I'm going to get around those, and what's going to solve those different problems.
I mean, that's a nice thing about someone like you doing this development, is that if I submit some feedback to you, you know, you can think about it and decide whether you want to incorporate that in your project, and it means that there is a good loop of feedback.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I guess that's one of the things I absolutely love about running my own company and things like that. Users can come directly to me and say, oh, hey, we'd like this feature. And then a week or two later, they'll see an update of the product with that feature they asked for, rather than, you know, a very big company like, you know, Microsoft or your more traditional big software companies. And it's sort of like, oh, I put in a request and you'll get an email back a few weeks later saying, oh, thanks for your feedback, we'll keep it in mind. And then you might see that feature appear 12 months later or 18 months later if you're really, really lucky. So certainly a whole different experience in terms of that feedback loop and being able to dynamically change software and react to what the public want, and especially when they give you good ideas and things like that, being able to implement those quickly.
And so when you do Media Center development, what's your sort of standard list of toolbox? What applications and things do you need when you're doing Media Center development?
I think I've pretty much standardized now down to, I'll use a lot of Adobe Fireworks for the design process, occasionally a little bit of WPF. I do sometimes do a bit of flow charting and things like that to sort of establish what screens I want in a program. So I've actually started using OneNote quite a lot, that comes with Microsoft Office 2007.
Yeah, that's great.
So it's just sort of more, you know, for brainstorming things I would have in the past. I might have used, you know, Microsoft Word or a text editor or something like that. So I'm using OneNote quite a bit because I can do all the diagrams and that sort of stuff in it as well. Also, I use Visio a little bit. And then after that, it's pretty much all Visual Studio and just sort of that hopping backwards and forwards between Visual Studio and Fireworks to create new graphics as I go along. And then when I go to package up the releases and all of that, then I'll be... I just use Wix, which is a freeware packaging tool, that's pretty much it for the Media Center development. I guess, you know, everybody has different preferences of what they're used to with design tools and things like that. But yeah, I think I'm pretty happy with Fireworks at the moment.
So the actual Media Center code, you know, the markup language, you're doing in Visual Studio, and obviously you're doing all the .NET stuff in there as well.
Yeah, I do everything in there. I tend to not use MCPL pad at all. I know other people tend to use that a little bit. I developed with Visual Studio, and I actually do all my debugging by launching a visuals, by launching a media center session, and I also use this other developer tool called Debug View, which allows me to have a look at real time debugging information as the media center app's running.
Right, and then that makes a good toolbox for you then.
Yeah, and I'm pretty much finding that's all I need. Apart from, of course, all the things like if I need to do things that, you know, there's any scripts that are running on websites and all the rest of it, I'm of course using SQL Server, so doing SQL Server and ASP.NET programming and things like that. So I use SQL Server. I've been put up a new website over the last few months, and I've been using the Expression Web for that quite a lot. So I've been really enjoying using that. And in the past, I used to use Dreamweaver to do that sort of thing, but I'm really enjoying the new features in Web. But that's pretty much all I use at the moment for the Media Center development.
And just go back on the Wix installer. I think we're going to probably talk about this on future shows maybe, but this is a relatively new thing, isn't it, for Media Center development. I know that Aaron Steven has been promoting the use of Wix for Media Center development. So what is the Wix installer?
Okay, so I think it stands for Windows Installer. Actually, I don't know what the X, maybe XML Windows Installer or something like that. The basic idea is it's for generating MSI packages. So it wasn't at all developed for Media Center, something that's been developed in tandem with the Windows Installer technologies as they've been coming out. Aaron Stebner then grabbed Wix and said, hey, this is when Vista came out at the end of last year, a lot of the traditional setup tools weren't working properly under Vista due to them not working with the UAC on there and not asking for the correct administrator privileges. So and Wix was sort of the only thing that did it at the time, if you only have Visual Studio, that is. Aaron sort of spent a bit of time putting together this is how you actually make setups with Wix, and it's basically an XML language where you specify how you want your software to install, and it's fairly technical to get into. So that's sort of apart from MCPL, this is the other area I think a lot of the Media Center developers have been having a lot of trouble with, is learning Wix. At the moment it's sort of the best way if you want to create a setup package that's going to work on 32-bit and 64-bit Vista, and you know, not have any issues with security and all the rest of it.
That's the question I was going to ask you, actually. When you're developing applications, do you have to specifically target 32-bit or 64-bit, or do you have one platform that works for both? One application that works for both platforms.
Generally, everything I do, I'm targeting MCPL, and therefore it's working on 64-bit and 32-bit without a problem. And same as working on an extender with no problem at all. I don't have to do anything differently at all. You start having to be a little bit more careful if you're calling into other third-party components that are on the system. So actually, an example of that is if you're writing something that deals with the scheduled recording system on Media Center, I think you need to actually release a 32-bit version and a 64-bit version because you're referencing a different DLL on the system. But for most of the apps I've been releasing, I think the last one where I needed a separate 64-bit installer, I think, was the Big Screen Business, and that was due to something else it was doing, not really Media Center specific. In general, it's 32-bit and 64-bit is not something I have to worry about at all.
Let's talk about some of the applications then. So we've talked about how you actually do the development, but you've got a whole sort of suite of applications. So talk us through the applications that you've got and what they do.
All right, well, I'll go back to the beginning. I started off with a couple of WPF applications. So Big Screen Photos, which is basically an online photo browser for if you're a user of Yahoo Flickr. So similarly to how you go and look at your photos on your own local hard drive, you use Big Screen Photos to go in and look at content directly online. I released an update to Big Screen Photos called Big Screen Photos 2 about 2 months ago, and that was done in MCPL, so that was sort of more of the same with a few cool new features like geo-browsing and things like that.
So before we leave that then, I wanted to talk about that. So Big Screen Photos 2 is a Media Center markup language for Vista. And I've tried it, and it's a really rich application. So this is a photo viewer for Flickr.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I should probably mention as well, the original version of that was in WPF, and I sort of liked the end results, but when I got to doing version 2, I'd already done a bit of MCPL, and I decided that was sort of a much better choice, and so I think there's a much, much sort of nicer and richer and smoother UI that you get in version 2, partially because I've used MCPL in there.
And what was the geo-browsing?
Okay, so the geo-browsing was, I wanted a way of users, sort of the latest rage, of course, on all the photo sites is that you can upload a photo directly from your mobile phone and you can stamp GPS information in there. So when somebody's browsing your photos, it means they can say, oh, where was this photo taken? And it brings up a map and pinpoints that exact location. So I wanted to do something like that inside Media Center. And the problem, of course, was that there's a whole stack of great mapping services out there like Google Maps and the Microsoft Live Earth and all the rest of it, but they're all designed to be hosted inside HTML browsers, so they're all pretty much unsuitable for what I wanted. I sort of had to come up with my own browsing experience, and what I did was I used some imagery from NASA and sort of had a flat Earth view where you sort of pan in 3D and you can sort of zoom into different regions of the world where photos are taken. And it's something that just sort of works in the background. So whenever you're browsing a set of photos, just say the way that you normally look at a set of photos inside Media Center on your local hard drive, when that set comes up, there's a little button up in the corner that says geo-browse, and then any photos that are in that set that you're looking at that have the GPS information in there, they'll then come up on that browser and you can see where they're taken.
That's a nice use of Media Center, isn't it, to get that photos and then present it with the map information. It's something I've not seen anybody else try on Media Center.
And I had a lot of fun doing that. I guess I've been used to the traditional HTML map viewers where you're talking about the a two-foot experience where you've got a whole stack of different buttons you can use and mouse wheels and all the rest of it to make it a really sort of interesting experience. And and of course that none of that was really available on Media Center. I mean, it's sort of just programming for four direction keys, an OK button and a back button. So the real challenge with that was trying to work out how to simplify it enough so it would work on a Media Center remote and not having somebody having to pick up a mouse and start clicking on some buttons to pan or zoom in on a map or something like that. So I actually went through probably three or four revisions of the UI before I got something that I was happy with, and the first couple I sort of tried to allow all these different features where you could pan and zoom freely and things like that, and I was just sort of finding they were just too cumbersome to use on the remote control.
Mm. And that's a free application.
It's in beta at the moment. I should mention that, pretty much all my applications, all the big screen applications, I'm going to be releasing those commercially over the next few months. They're not really going to be freeware anymore. They're going to be sold as OEM products, so hopefully they'll be getting shipped as well with Media Center systems and things like that, so people won't have to pay for a lot of them. And also, of course, there's going to be the long beta periods and things like that. So there's certainly going to be plenty of opportunity for people to try out the software for free and use it for a while, and then possibly upgrade to a new beta when it comes out without having to pay for a new one.
That's an interesting sort of debate that I've had on the show a few times recently about sort of pay versus freeware software. We all like free software, but then we want these people to people like yourself to develop applications, and the amount of time that they take to do something as professional as the applications that you're doing, it's something you can't keep doing for free forever, I guess.
Certainly. And I'd never intended these applications to be free when I started out with them. I guess it's I haven't perceived that the market's been there until recently for actually selling Media Center applications. A few of those earlier products, like version 1 products, which are never going to be sold because of version 2 is coming out. I guess they were sort of free, but the applications take a significant amount of time to make, and I guess I just can't justify spending all that time writing applications if there was sort of no no commercial end goals for them. So yeah, so certainly it's, I don't think it's realistic for end users to expect them to be getting everything for free that's of high quality. I think it's certainly, you know, certainly if it's something somebody's just sort of spent a couple of evenings doing and offering support and all those sort of things you offer with commercial software, yeah, well that's fine for them to do that for free. But I think sort of the level of what I'm trying to achieve, yeah, certainly I can't, you know, I can't say, oh, I'm going to spend 3 months developing something for free. And yeah, sort of not a whole lot of incentive to do something like that, I guess.
Because that's one of the differences, I think, between Media Center Markup Language on Vista and HTML applications is that the results are so much better, but it does require a lot more time you've got to put into the development process.
Oh yeah, certainly, and it's a whole development process. I guess in the past with the HTML apps and things like that, I wouldn't have called them a development process. It was something you just, you know, you load up an HTML editor and whip something up, and you know, away you go without too much effort. And yeah, certainly the new Vista applications, you're talking about projects that, you know, you have to spend several days before you can see anything, and then weeks refining, etc., etc. But I should mention as well, the applications, I haven't finalised pricing on them yet, but they're all going to be somewhere around the sort of $15 US to $25 US. So we're talking about, you know, the price of a couple of beers or something like that. So I think sort of the majority, especially the listeners of this show, would be people that wouldn't think twice about going and spending $300 on a new graphics card so they can get smoother DVD decoding or whatever it is. So I think, you know, somebody paying $15 or $20 for something that they're going to get a lot of use out, I don't think that's an issue at all. And I don't really think the fact that they have to pay something for it should discourage them at all.
No, absolutely.
Certainly, if I was, you know, saying, oh yeah, hey, this is going to be $200 for this software, yeah, certainly I'd expect people to be upset with that. But yeah, I think for, you know, for cheap prices, I'm sort of interested in, you know, making it very, very cheap for end users and going for volume instead of trying to charge a whole lot and only get a few sales sort of thing.
Yeah. And then what other applications? I think one of my personal favourite ones is Big Screen Headlines. So just explain a bit about that.
Okay, yeah, so Big Screen Headlines, it's pretty much an RSS reader for Media Center. So you can use it to read blogs and listen to podcasts. There's hooks in there so you can actually view any attached media. So that could be, you know, web videos, could be audio, could be images, things like that. And it hooks into the Internet Explorer 7 subscribe feed system as well, so it allows you to quickly tap into feeds without having to download them and things like that. And you can also use the IE 7 subscriber feed system to automatically download attachments and things like that. So, for example, you could subscribe to a RSS feed from MSN Soapbox and it would automatically download each video clip, so then when you go to view it in Big Screen Headlines, you can immediately start watching the video off your local hard drive.
Well, it is really nice way of reading RSS. I've been a big fan of getting sort of RSS on Media Center for some time, really, because you've got your connected to your display or your TV or whatever, and you don't just want to watch TV and all DVDs or whatever on the thing. You want to be able to sort of interact with content, and this seems a really good way of doing it.
Yeah, for sure. And it's and because it's it's great that they've got this open standard with RSS, and there's so many different types of content that you can get. And you know, certain people will be interested in things like podcasts and things like that. Other people might be interested in sports news or some world news or something like that. And other people might want to be monitoring somebody's development blog through it. You know. So there's a whole lot of sort of very different uses you can get because there's so much different content coming through on RSS.
Well, I find it quite useful for just, you know, if you're watching something and you just, you know, you take a break when what you're watching and you just want to check some headlines, you can flick quite quickly into it, check the headlines and just carry on watching your program after you've finished.
Yeah, and it was designed to sort of be very much a quick get-in, get-out experience, you know, so you can jump into it through a commercial break or something like that and, you know, catch up on some news and things like that. I should probably mention Big Screen Headlines too. I'm not sure when this show's going to air, but it's a good chance the beta of Big Screen Headlines 2 will be out by the time this is on. So, what I've done is it's pretty much a complete rewrite of version 1. The Big Screen Headlines version 1, I think I've been working with MCPL for about 3 weeks or something when I wrote it, and I think it only spent about 2 weeks making it. This one sort of brings in all the new UI skills that I've learnt and graphic design skills and all that sort of thing. And but some of the sort of the more major features for end users in there, one of the things I was really happy with is in version one, and I think all the other sort of Media Center blog readers around, the problem is that they sort of parse some of the text, but that's about all you can see of the article. In the version two, what I've got going is that you can actually now view the article with all the images inside it, so you can read it as you'd normally read it inside Internet Explorer or inside an RSS reader. Certainly there's a lot of HTML that I can't reproduce in the Media Center interface, but I've sort of got enough going there to make it a very, very sort of similar experience. And especially like in the past, you'd be reading an article and they said, oh yeah, and this picture, this such and such product pictured below, and then there'd be no picture there. So now there's that picture there and things like that. And there's also now we've got very, very good support for a lot of different RSS formats, so being able to properly process things like iTunes feeds and the rich RSS media feeds, and being able to pull out information, things like being able to drill down on comments on blogs and the different sorts of attachments and things like that are on there. Also, in the first version, when you were browsing a list of articles or a list of blogs, there'd just be a headline. Now it does things like it pulls out the actual thumbnail, so it gives you a particularly nice experience when you're browsing feeds from Soapbox, for example. They've got nice big thumbnails that come up and video ratings and number of downloads and information like that that comes up when you're looking at the list of articles. So they're probably a couple of the major features in there. One other feature as well that is going to make things, I think, a lot easier for end users is it supports a new OPML 2.0 dynamic feed format. So what it basically allows you to do, in the past, if you wanted to have a feed inside big screen headlines, you needed to have it inside your subscribed feeds or inside one of the presets. Now what you can do is you can actually point to an OPML file on somebody's site, and it'll dynamically read that and get a list of what all feeds are that are available. So for example, on your on the Digital Lifestyle site, you've got an OPML feed where I think you've got about 8 blogs in there, or that 8 RSS feeds, so you know, for Media Center Show, etc. So what the end user will be able to do is point at that OPML URL, and then if you decide to add a feed in a month's time or something like that, then the moment you add that feed, it'll immediately come up in the end user system. And so that works quite well with a lot of the big new sites and things like that are producing OPML files now, so it's sort of a much easier way to manage all the feeds that you want to have a look at.
That's good. So it's like kind of like an auto-discovery of... and be able to publish new feeds.
So great way to sort of discover new content and things like that. And I've got it pointed at a few sites that have got sort of, you know, top 100 blogs and top 100 podcasts or video podcasts or whatever, and I don't have to worry about links expiring and all that sort of thing inside those lists. I just point at the OPML file and it will pick up whatever new comes through there, you know, even if it's 6 months after I've deployed the program.
So there's some preset feeds in there as well as being able to have your own feeds.
So there's a number of presets like in the original version, but there's, I guess, a lot more pointing at OPML files on the net rather than me trying to hard code a list of feeds in there that could change. And I think even there's a number of feeds in version one that have already people aren't using, or they've moved their addresses and things like that, so it'll certainly help with all that.
Yeah, that's good idea, like you said, because things go stale very quickly with links and RSS feeds and things like that.
There's also some other benefits, like, you know, people will be able to create their own OPML feeds as well. So, you know, you've got potential applications like being able to point to another machine on your network that's got an RSS reader on there and have that expose an OPML file or something like that. So it sort of makes that sort of management quite easy as well.
Mm. This one is probably one of the applications that I can see sort of along with the sort of the movie type cataloging applications. This is probably one of the most useful applications I can see, where it, you know, people talk about browsing on Media Center, but that's not really what you want to do on a 10-foot, but to get the headlines, and RSS is ideal, and this is an ideal application for that.
Yeah, and it's been, really popular out there and all of that, so I'm hoping version 2 is going to go even better. I've got some number of nice new UI things in there. One thing I'll talk about is the main menu on there. I've got this new system that allows you to, in version 1 of Big Screen Headlines, you just had this left and right scrolling list of icons. Now it's something a bit more like what you see on the Xbox 360 dashboard, where you've got panels that slide left and right and reveal lists of blogs and headlines and things like that. So the idea is that you can get drilled directly to content you want to get to from the main menu, rather than having to go through 2 or 3 presses of the button before you get to where you need to go.
That sounds good, though. And so that's definitely one to download. And so are there any other applications on the go?
There's the Big Screen Contacts. I'm also I haven't finalised what I'm putting in version 2, but there's also a version 2 of that coming out. Big Screen Contacts is a program for getting to your Windows contact directory, so you can look up people's phone numbers and thumbnails and birthdays and addresses and all that sort of thing from Media Center. So that one's that sort of fairly self-explanatory, but there's version 2 coming out, and I've got a few things I want to put in there, but I won't say anything about that at the moment. Another app that I've got out there that's been hugely popular in Australia is Big Screen Weather. So that's for getting weather forecasts and things like that. And in Australia, we've got a government service called the Bureau of Meteorology that have absolutely fantastic data there and imagery and all that sort of thing. So that allows people to sort of drill down a lot of information in Big Screen Weather. I do have a version 2 planned of that, and I've been making a lot of progress with incorporating weather data from the US. I'm still finding at the moment trying to get weather information that can be republished for places like Europe and things like that is still completely elusive. But there's a strong possibility I'll have support for US weather in the next version of this product.
Well, that's a nice application. That I tried the weather, and although I was only getting Australian weather, it does look nice. And again, it's a nice little useful utility to put in Media Center.
If anyone wants to come on holidays to Australia, it's a good way of finding out what weather you're going to get.
Sunny.
not where I live. If you go up north, you'll be right.
Yeah. So if you want to do a one for the UK, you can just get put rain.
That'd be easy, actually. I mean, every time I've been there, it was rainy and cold. So I think just have a time of year indicator so it can say snow as well, snow and sleet.
Yeah, yeah. Wind, rain, snow, sleet. There you go.
Average temperature over there is about 5 degrees. So.
Probably something like that.
I could just render a single image that has, don't have to worry about the UI at all.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I'll probably get a lot of upset UK listeners now, but I'm in Manchester, and
it's a lovely country.
Manchester's well known for the rain, so never mind.
You've mentioned the Big Screen Movies, and there's another one called Big Screen TV Series. Both those products have generated absolutely huge amounts of interest in their users, and without doubt those two products are the ones I get the most emails for, people asking can we try betas and all that sort of thing. So those have been a work in progress. They're a little bit lower in priority than the other products I'm working on, and the commercial work that I'm doing at the moment, due to there's a few copyright issues and all that sort of thing, just sort of making sure people can get data and display it, and that I won't get in any trouble or breach anyone's copyright, etc. There are another couple of products that are sort of on the horizon. I'm not going to give any release dates for any of that, because set the wrong expectations with people. And I guess with both those products, I'm not 100% on what features are going to be in the final product as well. So, you know, what tends to happen with me is that I'll be developing something, I'll be thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to finish this application in 3 days or something like that, and then a day later I'll suddenly come up with all these ideas of things that I just have to add, sort of thing, before I release it, and then that'll blow it out by another 2 weeks and things like that. And especially if I'm doing a product for myself and not for somebody else where there's a fixed budget, it's sort of very easy to sort of fall in that trap where I start adding features when I'm about to release it, and it just sort of blows the whole release date out.
Yeah. So you never kind of get finished because you're always, there's always something else you want to add.
And I'm a bit too much of a perfectionist. I always sort of, I'll do something and then not be 100% happy with it. And I think, like, definitely one area there is my, I'm not at all a graphic designer. I think I'm getting better at it, but I'm still, I still look at a design after I've done it and sort of cringe a bit and think, oh, I could have done that bit better and that bit better. And then I'll, sort of try and do something better. And and I guess it's probably a bit like if you're a painter and things like that, putting more paint on the canvas doesn't often fix the problem. So those sort of factors always sort of creep in just before I'm about to release a product, and sometimes they get me, and because I haven't got a signed contract saying I need to deliver this product on this day, then I'll say, oh no, I want to add these extra features and release in a couple of weeks, sort of thing.
I guess when you're going through the for your main products do a proper release cycle and you've sort of got paid downloads, then you've got to be a bit more strict with yourself.
Certainly. And I think one of the reasons why I'm not the big screen movies and big screen TV series isn't the high priority at the moment is that I've won't say what they are, but I've got my own deadlines and things like that for some of the other big screen products that I want to release commercially soon. And so I'm trying as much as possible not to have that last minute, hey, I want to add these 10 features type things going on.
And one other thing which I wanted to mention as well was on your blog recently, on the big screen blog, which we'll come back to in a sec, but was the WPF touch application that was showed off. That looked pretty cool.
I had a bit of fun doing that. That's sort of my other sideline is a lot of the commercial clients who are interested in Media Center are generally their first point of call is desktop apps, so things like Sidebar and things like that use WPF. We had company Mabode in New Zealand, they were basically had plans to set up some a whole lot of really sort of cool touch devices and things like that on a standard tech ed in New Zealand, and we decided we'd try and sort of do a Surface style app since they've been getting all the hype lately, and the of course the Apple iPhone and the other iTouch phone and things like that. And in New Zealand they've sort of been really groundbreaking over there in terms of the touch technology. You might have seen the videos by a guy called Jeff Han and things like that. So a lot of that stuff's all coming out of New Zealand. The plan was that, we'll get a 42-inch plasma screen and hook it up with all this touch technology and try and use WPF to do something with it. And now, unfortunately, during the development process, I couldn't get any of this touch technology over to Australia. So I actually developed the whole thing using a Wacom tablet to try and simulate touch movements and things like that. So it was a little bit closer than using a mouse and all of that. And I was a bit uncertain. I only had a short amount of time to do it, and I was a bit uncertain how things were going to work. So, for example, there was one of the sort of classic effects that they've been showing on the Surface apps from Microsoft is that ability to sort of pull a screen. You've got a list of horizontal list of items, being able to sort of pull the screen across and sort of throw it across the screen and have it, scroll all the way to the other end of the list. And I wasn't sure that it relied on some sort of fairly specific timing and things like that. So it was doing things like measuring how long the drag action was done for and how fast it was done and things like that. So I was completely uncertain how that was going to translate through to this touch technology and whether, there were going to be latency issues and things like that. But apparently all works well. I didn't actually get to see the thing myself because I didn't go over to New Zealand. But it apparently all works well in the end, and apparently also works on a UMPC as well with the touch technology on that.
Oh, that's quite nice. Have you tried using Media Center with kind of, like, obviously you've not tried it yourself, but have you seen Media Center with on a touchscreen?
No, I haven't. But I'm actually getting hold of, as part of this project, I'm getting the UMPC sent to me, I think, on the weekend. So, by the time you publish this interview, I'll actually have one in my hands. And I think it's the Samsung Q1. Very much looking forward to having a play with that. And
the Q1 is really nice running Media Center. That's what I've been using, and I prefer to use that Media Center than the Origami Experience, even though it's, the Origami is optimized for touch. I find that the Media Center works very well on the Q1.
I'm looking forward to playing with it, and apparently the one I've been sent had Vista preloaded on it and all the rest of it, so all ready to go with Media Center.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see how your applications scale to that size.
And then also, of course, the other thing is being able to see use my Surface application with my hands will be a real nice thing, and see which bits I got right and didn't get right in there. I should probably explain as well, I didn't mention what the actual application is it's supposed to be a sort of a general contact and collaboration kiosk type of system. So the idea is that you could walk up to the system and start doing a video chat with somebody, or have a look at some online videos, or book a meeting with somebody. So sort of like an Outlook type experience, but designed very much for sort of 10-foot and touch and surface and that sort of thing. And then we put some sort of, we fudged a feature where you had a sign in, where instead of having to type something in, you just put your fingerprint on your finger on the screen, and it supposedly grabs a fingerprint and identifies you and signs you in and things like that. So that was sort of the general gist of the application. We had it preloaded with all the different speakers from TechEd in New Zealand, and had a whole lot of links to videos and things like that from Virtual Tech Ed as well.
Yeah, it looked really nice. I saw the screenshots on your blog, and it did look pretty good.
And I had a lot of fun doing it. I only had a very, very short amount of time to do it. I think it was done in about, I had the brief, I think, beginning of last week, and had to deliver it for Sunday, which was a set-up day for Tech Ed. So, they had 5-6 days. The way I tend to work on projects is I'll just go really, really hard at it, and I think I spent 5 or 6 days where I was, working up till maybe 4 in the morning, and then I'd be up again at 9 or 10 and back into it sort of thing. So I've probably got about, 2 or 3 weeks worth of normal work achieved in that 1 week. But I always have fun doing that. I get, get very, very immersed in the development and the experience and things like that. And I'll go to sleep and I'll be dreaming solutions to the bits I was having problems with, and wake up in the morning and I'll be able to continue coding and that sort of thing. So, I don't know how good that is for my state of mind and health and all of that. But
I don't think dreaming in Media Center markup language is healthy.
I don't think so. especially not in version 1. Maybe version 2 will be a bit better. But my wife says I grind my teeth while I'm sleeping. So.
And of course, someone mentioned about the blog, the Big Screen blog. It's a really good blog for keeping up to date with all the stuff you're working on, but there's also lots of other interesting things that you put on there as well.
I think I still haven't worked out what I'm doing with my blog yet. Readers probably get a bit confused. I'll, 1 week I'll be doing MCPL tutorials, and then the next week I might be bitching about a TV station in Australia or talking about somebody else's Media Center product that's coming out. But I've had a lot of fun doing that. I probably put a lot of dumb posts as well as good posts up there, but it's sort of been really well received by the public. I think I was checking the other day, I think I've had nearly 200,000 page views on there since it went live in, I think it was November or the end of October last year. So, it seems to be reasonably popular. And because I'm also sort of covering WPF and things like that, I get a sort of lot of different audiences coming onto the blog to read about different things, which is good too. So, sort of connect with the Media Center world as well as the WPF world at the same time. So I really like doing it, and I think it's really beneficial because it sort of, I guess, gives me a more human face. A lot of people think MobileWiz is a team of people somewhere in a room sort of thing, and they come on and read my blog, they sort of understand more about what I'm about and what I'm doing and what I've got set up and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's a good way of getting sort of feedback to you as well, isn't it, through the blog?
Certainly, and invaluable for being able to release products and things like that as well. And
gauge interest from people. And like recently I ran the beta program for Big Screen Photos too. I put the announcement up on my blog and said, hey, who wants to get involved? And, you know, so sort of connected to a whole lot of people through there, and got them onto the beta that I might not have come across otherwise. Mm.
Yeah, you get people who want to contribute rather than just looking for a sort of the latest freebie application.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, in terms of sites, then, if you know, people want to find out more information about Mobilesware and your Big Screen applications, where's the best place for them to go?
Just go straight to the Mobilesware site. So that's mobilesware.net. And actually, I redid my site a few months ago after it had been neglected probably for about six years or so. So if you go on there now, there's direct links on the front page to all the Media Center products. Also, there's a big link to the Big Screen blog on there as well. And there's also a resources page if you want to find out about some of the other Media Center sites. So I've got, you know, things like links to the Digital Lifestyle on there and the Green Button and xpmediacenter.com.au and some of those other popular sites.
Mm. I'll include a link for that in the show notes as well, so people can go directly through to it.
Yeah, sure. And generally the best place if people want to sort of keep up with what's going on and what I'm releasing, come and have a look at the Big Screen blog, and that's mobilewares.spaces.live.com, or just go there through the main Mobilewares page, and I'll tend to be posting information on my blog before I put it on my site. I tend to wait till I've got a more finished releasable product before I put something on my site, whereas my blog I'll tend to just do a quick 10-minute post and throw up some screenshots and say, oh, here's what I'm working on at the moment.
It's worth keeping it. It's always interesting, but some entertaining posts on there as well.
Yes.
Especially your rants about the EPG issues in Australia.
I don't know what you heard. There's been some absolutely great news in Australia. Last week, ITV were being sued by one of the major TV networks over the EPG. They actually won their case, and so that's absolutely brilliant news for Australians. And also, there's some other things going on with the EPGs with other bodies and all of that. So, just for those listeners who don't know, Australia's one of the few countries in the world where we don't actually have an EPG and Media Center that's supplied by Microsoft, and you have to go to a third party company called ITV, but we're being told by the TV stations that they're breaching copyright, etc. So great that that's all been sorted out.
It'd be nice to have an official supported EPG, but I guess the ITV is a good solution, and now they're not being sued is definitely a good thing.
So I mean, with ITV it was always before people would sign up, and like they offer a 12-month subscription, and you're signing up and you thing, are they actually going to be here in 12 months sort of thing, you know, so I think they're on a more on a commercial level. It's very, very important because it allows some of the big OEM vendors and things like that, your Hewlett Packards and things like that, to actually be able to ship Media Center systems as for what they were meant for. In the past here, it's been Media Center systems were shipped, but they were generally always without a TV tuner card, and they weren't being shipped as something you use for TV recording, which very much diminished their popularity here. So I think the ability for these big companies to now be able to say, oh, here's a system and we can supply an EPG and comes with a tuner card and all the rest of it, it's just going to make a huge difference here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a vital part of it, isn't it?
So it was...
And if it's in the box, it...
Definitely. And as we all know, I mean, it's sort of, quite hairy for a new user to set up Media Center with all the TV tuning stuff and all of that. Well, especially in Australia, with all the hacks and patches and all the rest of it you need to put on there. But, so certainly I think it's going to make the market go, and hopefully some of the extenders can be released as well over the next few months. I think that's, going to really, really change things down here in terms of Media Center take up.
Let's hope so. Many thanks for your time today. You've got some great applications. I do love the way that all the applications have the great sort of look and feel about them, and the sort of the Media Center Vista Media Center versions really are rich applications, and it's always good to see your applications coming out.
Yeah, thanks, Ian, and yeah, I'm having a lot of fun writing them, and yeah, hopefully have a lot more applications out, especially over the next few months. So yeah, been quiet the first 6 months of this year, but next few months probably expect to see maybe about four or five new products.
Excellent. I think we'll probably have to do a recap in later in the year then and talk about some of this stuff.
Yeah, for sure, and I'd love to provide some of the apps for giveaways and things like that.
Excellent.
As well, so yeah, hopefully I'll be able to have something I can give you there on those lines in the next few months.
Excellent. So listeners, keep listening to the show if they want to find out more then.
All right, great. And thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's been great. Always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for now. Please keep the nominations for the Media Center Show Awards coming in. I really want to make sure that we cover all the bases. So if you've got any comments, suggestions on there, let me know. Get the forums. And let me know about syncing podcasts with Zune. And I'll see you next week. Bye.